Buenos ding dong diddly dias. This is the David Martinez podcast coming at you on a Tuesday, September the 9th. Hopefully coming to the end, to the close, to the conclusion of what has been kind of a brutal summer here in good old SoCal. Many days in the triple digits, the triple Fahrenheit digits, as we use here in this country. And it's just been sort of brutal and just demoralizing and demotivating and, and somewhat draining on the old electric bill. So hopefully coming to the end of that, hopefully, my next podcast will be in a much more, comfortable climate for podcasting, especially being in a small room here where you've got computers that are generating heat and just a single ceiling fan and a bit of an AC kind of going, but not really enough airflow to sort of combat the computer heat and my own heat, and also probably a little bit of heat coming off these light bulbs, to really sort of cool down, unless I really wanted to juice that thing, which I don't after last month's electrical bill. I'll just start off with the old podcast password. So the podcast password, as the many of you who listen are aware, is the little mechanism by which I separate the the David Martinez podcast wheat from the chaff. The ones who listen versus all the hanger-ons, all the pretenders, all the ones with their sycophantic compliments. So if you want to communicate to me that you did listen, that you did indeed listen to this particular episode, you would just sort of comment or text or email me or whatever the podcast password for this episode, and then I will know. I say, oh, okay, well, that particular person cares. At least cared enough to get through, like, the first couple minutes of it. And then whether or not they turned it off is who knows. But at least they cared that much. And, you know, that's enough. For me, at least, that's enough. At this stage, I'll take what I can get. So the podcast password is pencil shavings. again, it's one of those things where I'm about to press record, and I'm like, oh, password, pencil. That's stupid. Pencil shavings, golden. So that's pretty much what happened this particular time. Podcast password is pencil shavings. So feel free to use it. The people who use my podcast, the podcast, not my podcast password, it belongs to everyone. The podcast password, last episode, my good friend, Mr. Donovan. Donovan, thank you so much for that. I'm trying to remember, did anybody else use the password? I feel like Jonathan Cleed usually does, but he may not have this time. My friend Sam Anaya, he did. I'm pretty sure he did. And I think that was it for this particular episode. So for those of you who did, or if I forgot your name, I'm so sorry. But for those who I remembered, you know, hey, good job. Keep up the good work. And for those who I remembered, maybe didn't actually, you've got a lot of nerve taking credit. A lot of nerve. Anywho, so moving on to the podcast topics for this episode. I'm thinking about changing this podcast to be that thing that I do when my wife's gone for, you know, even an hour, because that pretty much seems to be the length and the breadth of this particular little hobby of mine. Basically, the podcast has just become one of those things that I do that I know that I can sneak in when she's going to be gone for some period of time. I feel like when you're married as a husband, I can only speak to the husband portion of this because I really don't, you know, see very clearly, or at least I can't really speak into how this appears on the other side of the gender divide. I feel like you develop a certain number of things that you do that you normally really can't do, or at least are more difficult or not as enjoyable perhaps when your wife is at home. And not to say that, you know, these are necessarily bad things. Like, they're not necessarily these little secret vices that you sort of keep and hidden away. And then when your wife's gone, you sort of bring them out and play with them. I mean, sometimes. But generally speaking, it's just more stuff that's either she's not into, and so having a sort of having that kind of negativity around when you're trying to enjoy it doesn't help, or just kind of diminishes from the enjoyment. Or it's something she really, you know, sort of nags you about when you're, you know, sort of there, and so you don't want to hear all that while you're trying to enjoy your thing. Or, you know, whatever. But, you know, you sort of develop a small number of these little hobbies or things that, like, you just sort of do when she's gone. So, like, for me, it really depends on the length of time that I have to deal with. So, she's going to be gone. Like, today, it's like, you know, I call her, hey, sweetie, how you doing? Oh, me and, you know, that guy just out shopping. Oh, sweet. So, about what time you think you're going to be home? I think we're going to be home, like, around 7. Oh, cool. Okay. Well, just let me know. So, why, you know, do you need something? No. I just need a time frame. And it was true. I just want to know the kind, the allowance, the time budget that I had to work with. And then whatever it is, it's fine. Great. Cool. Leave it at that. Don't feel like you have to sort of take away from that or come home soon, or just let me know what it is. And whatever it is, it is. And I know that's the budget that I have to work with. So then I come back and I go, all right, cool. With this budget, what can I afford to do? It's a bit like money that way. So in this particular case, if it's like an hour, couple hours tops, really there's only a couple things I can really do with that, at least as far as stuff that I generally enjoy doing. If it's like me, yeah, maybe hour and a half. So usually can't fit like a movie in there, but if I've already worked out some podcast topics like I, you know, did the other day, I go, okay, cool, I can probably squeeze in a podcast there. Because yes, even though this thing is usually only around give or take 30 minutes. Like, it does take a little bit of time to, like, get out the audio equipment and, like, create a new project file and, like, write out my topics more or less on a piece of paper and, like, kind of walk around the house talking to myself as I kind of, you know, kind of sort of rehearse in my mind what I'm going to say. So there's, like, some prep time and then, like, actual recording time of, like, you know, anywhere from, like, 20-something to 30-something minutes and then go. I mean, once it's done, it's cool. I can just sort of, you know, post it afterward and kind of anytime. I don't need her necessarily to be away from that. But at least for like the preparation of and the making of the podcast, it helps, because it helps for me just to not be distracted, to kind of be in sort of in and with my own thought, to get in touch with myself, to like really cultivate me. You know what I mean? For the purposes of this podcast, and to not have those kind of distractions. And then also recording wise, I don't necessarily want, you know, any of the, what are you doing in there? I'm podcasting. Well, dinner's almost ready. It's getting, I know, a moment, just give me 5 more minutes. What, you said that 5 minutes, just, would you just give me some time? I just need some time for this, okay? People are wanting to hear what I have to say about the ALS bucket challenge. So, you know, not always conducive to podcast recording when someone's at home. And not that she's always sort of like that, of course. That was a exaggerated kind of, you know, scenario there, mostly meant for comedic purposes. But you get the gist. So if I've got like an hour and a half sort of time, I can try to squeeze in a podcast. More than that, like a few hours, you know, two or three hours, it's like, okay, cool, what can I... Usually my mind will go to like, okay, what can I eat? Sorry. And if the time happens to like way overlap, like like dinner time, like if she's going to be home in time for like dinner, or reasonably at home in time for dinner, I'm just going to have to chill and hang out because she wants to have dinner together. And again, totally understandable. I do not begrudge her that whatsoever. But if the time frame is going to be such that she's going to like extend past a meal, and you know she's obviously going to eat, and then I've obviously got to eat, then it's like, okay, great. What kind of just horribly greasy, barbecue-y, spicy, just nasty kind of just food can I just shove down my gullet? That normally she gets on my case for eating when she's here. What kind of just sinful culinary, you know, delicacies can I indulge in, while she's away? And it usually ends up being something like, barbecue is usually really high on that list. Anything like ribs or tri-tip or, you know, something like that. Sometimes it's like, at the very least, maybe just like a really just thick, juicy, sloppy, just disgusting burger. If not that, maybe something really spicy, like really spicy Asian-y kind of food. And not that she doesn't like these things, but these are things that either A, she's not as much in the mood for as I am, or B, they're things that she usually goes like, isn't that kind of expensive? We should really, you know, just rein it in a little bit and like, you know what? Neither of us are getting thinner, so maybe we should just go to Panera and just, you know. Whatever it is, if she's going to be gone long enough to miss a meal, then I will always try to gravitate towards something that she would normally get on my case for if she were here. And then finally, like what happened this last week, and if she's going to be gone like for like all day or even like overnight someplace, like on a woman's retreat or something like that, then all bets are off. Then it's pretty much like a filthy smorgasbord of every gluttonous vice that I have that I don't get to enjoy as much when she's here. So I'm eating a bunch of sloppy food. I'm like watching like bad horror movies all the time, a marathon of just like bad 80s or 90s or early 2000s era horror films, or I'm like, you know, drinking this beer or that whiskey, smoking these cigars. Like, it's just like, it gives me like a small glimpse into the life and the person that I would be if I didn't have a wife. And then don't get me wrong, I enjoy it. It is like tobacco, alcohol, and barbecue laden, Disneyland while it's happening. But afterwards, in the aftermath of just not feeling quite right and, you know, sort of being tired and sluggish and maybe a little headachy, I go, you know, it's really good that I've got a wife. I see now why men who have wives live longer than their single counterparts. Because these are the things that I would just do all day. Like, why else do I have money? Why else do I go to a job except to come home and enjoy all of this stuff, all of this crap, in my free time? So it's a good thing. It's a good thing that I have a wife, and it's a good thing that there is a sort of limiter or governor to my rather gluttonous tendencies. As with most husbands, I find. But, you know, when those times come, when I get those little slivers of time and vacation from all that, I do enjoy them. And I don't begrudge them, and I don't apologize for them. So there. Oh, gosh, was there anything else on that particular topic? I don't think so. I mean, I think I'll kind of finish just by saying, I mean, all that to be said, cause I know like, you know, there's certain, how shall I put this, sort of uppity kind of single types. And again, I can only speak to the males, here as I don't really have a lot of special insight into females in this regard, who will hear something like this and go like, like, what a sucker, what a chump. Like, nobody tells me what to do. Like, I live my life. Like, when I want to do this, I do this. And, like, if I'm, like, fit or whatever, I do it for myself. I do it. And we'll try to, you know, sort of see how ridiculous this whole scenario of mine is. And there's an extent to which it is sort of silly and ridiculous. Obviously, if I should be abstaining from certain things, that's for a good reason. And either I should or I shouldn't. There's an extent to which, you know, when I was single, I could sort of do, you know, in that sense, whatever I wanted. You know, I often enjoyed going out to restaurants by myself and having a nice drink by myself and going to movies by myself and really just doing a lot of things on my own because I enjoyed sort of being alone and sort of having myself as company, even though it sounds horribly narcissistic. And I don't quite have as much of that now that she's gone. And now that I'm married, and you know, when she leaves for a while, like I do kind of like, you know, jump on those opportunities like a rat, like, okay, I can be alone for a little bit. I can do this thing that I want to do. But all that being said, I would never, ever, ever trade everything else that is wonderful and complete and put together and fulfilling in my life just to have, you know, just those small amounts of, you know, sort of selfish, self-serving kind of creature comforts back. Never. Not in a million years. Because I remember how weird and alienating it is to be sort of single and how, I don't know, I feel like the longer, at least for me, the longer you are sort of single, the more sort of weird and whatever you sort of get in them, and the less you understand why somebody wouldn't want to keep being this way, but at the same time kind of being jealous of and kind of wanting it the other way and so on and so forth. So it's, you know, again, I would not trade all that stuff to be said, and I hope I didn't paint too pessimistic a picture there. I love being married, and I love being married to the woman that I'm married to. And even when I don't always entirely love it, because, you know, we are people and people are different and differences cause frictions, I do recognize that as a whole, cumulatively, it is very good for me. It is good for man not to be alone. So there is that. Next topic. So I feel like I'm kind of sparse here on topics only because A, I didn't have a lot of time to sort of prep, which is seems to be a reoccurring theme on the David Martinez podcast. You know, episode 97. Well, I just slapped some together again, so we're going to talk about curtains and LED light bulbs and why I didn't cut the grass again on Saturday. Which will all probably be somewhere in my podcast between now and episode 97. A little prophecy there. But also, the notebook that I have, which I believe was part of a set that my sister-in-law, Ada, gave me. I ran out of paper. And so I'm like, okay, well, I just have to rely on what's floating around in the old noggin toboggan. As unreliable and as incomplete and unformed as it is, I'm just going to have to go off the cuff here a little bit more than the normal. So, you know, whatever. I'll live. The wife's calling. I wish I had an automated thing on my phone for, like, can't talk now, podcasting. Bummer. Well, we'll see what happens. Anyhow, okay, so moving on. Gosh, I'm getting so distracted. I am a scatterbrained person. So the next topic I wanted to hit, and it was just something that had been kind of floating around in my notes for a while, and I thought I'd just sort of bust it out for today's little episode. I guess I'll start with my topic sort of title, which is that your IT guy is not smarter than you. Your IT guy, your computer guy, your señor de la computadora, is not smarter than you. And it's one of those things where it's like if you had pressed the average sort of citizen to, you know, with the question, like, do you think your IT guy is smarter than you? They'd probably sort of say no, but I really do feel like there's an extent to which there is this kind of mythical quality about people who know a bit about computers and who sort of work on and fix and people who understand them to people who don't, to people who are a bit more computer illiterate that way, to people who only have just a very basic and fundamental and just essential, I should say, knowledge of computers and computing sort of in general. I sort of come across this quite a bit where, like, I'll be working on somebody's computer, and usually the older they are, the more likely something like this is going to happen, where they come to me with a problem, and I go, okay, cool, let's take a look at it, and I go, you know, hop on there for a minute, and I check, do this, fix it, and they go, oh my goodness, that's so amazing. Oh, I wish I was smart like that, or, like, I wish it was the... And I always kind of buck against that a little bit. No. I am certainly not smarter than you. And I've had people who say these sort of things to me that are, at least in my opinion, in their own ways, far brighter than I have. You know, just, brilliant college professors or sharp attorney types or people in the medical field or, you know, people who I guess at least traditionally you would think like, okay, these are obviously fairly bright, at the very least very, you know, sort of clever people. Why are they telling me, you know, I'm smart because I showed them why they, you know, their email was receiving but not sending or something like that, and I explained it to them. And I really do think like it's a weird combination of things. I feel like when I say I feel like, it's because I really don't have a lot of hard concrete evidence and research to kind of back this up. But in the back of my mind, I have this perception that, starting probably somewhere in the 90s, when, you know, you had the dot-com boom, and where, well, everything was kind of was certainly already well on its way to being computerized, consumer-oriented computerization, you know, in the way we shop and the things that we sort of buy and our medical records and all these sort of things started becoming more affluent, or sorry, not affluent, pervasive, I guess, if that's the word. Somebody give me a thesaurus, Theosaurus Rex. Sometime around then is when you started seeing right around that time, you started seeing all these young people who, because of the virtue of understanding some bit about computers, i.e. they wrote some program or built some software or some algorithm or some bit of, you know, hardware or some kind of technology that then ended up making them millions and millions of dollars. And, you know, with the I don't know if it was an explosion of, or maybe just a greater presence in the news of hackers and hacker sort of types, phone freaks and all these other sort of types of people. It almost, I think, sort of cumulatively attached this almost mythical kind of wizard-like quality to people who understood computers. And, you know, understandably so, because as more and more things become computerized, the people who understand these things and who can then manipulate and then even sort of bend the rules of these things as maybe was sort of put in the Matrix, you know, are almost like the wizards and mages and alchemists of our time, you know, like, oh, well, everyone has to follow by the rules of, you know, the kind of computer that I get and my, you know, credit cards and my banks and whatnot. But these computer types, like they can alter the reality of this digital world that we've sort of created. And again, I really do feel like there is this, I have to keep going back to the same sort of wizard or mage or alchemist type sort of persona that gets sort of put on people who get this stuff as people who understand the fundamentals, the elemental sort of building blocks of what makes this digital world go, and then who can manipulate it with but a few dancing strokes on their keyboards and blah, blah, blah. And it's just, and I feel like, not only does it, is that impression sort of made, by people as, you know, as people who maybe don't understand this stuff quite as well, but who, you know, like it and appreciate it. But then also like IT guys love to, sort of perpetuate the myth that they're kind of smarter, that it takes a particularly clever or smart sort of person to do what we do. For the most part. And I'll stop right here by saying that, like, obviously in IT, like in any field, some people are going to be just smarter at it than others. You know, some people who are just cleverer, who have a better aptitude for this particular type of cleverness, or who just have a stronger desire and a will to learn it, will be better at it than others. And there are some people whose knowledge in this field I am highly envious of, certainly. But as a whole, just to get into this field, just to do what we do, like pretty much any other discipline out there, it just takes time. And it just takes a little bit of sort of, you know, desire to sort of learn it and to sort of apply it. But, you know, IT guys like to perpetuate the sort of myth we are sort of smarter than other people. And the reason is obvious. We like to, hang on one second. I am doing something over here. Sorry. Ugh. How awful an interruption like that. But we enjoy it. Like we like, you know, I don't know how many times IT guys have posted some thing on the internet about like dealing with like, oh, the stupid end users. And like, can you believe, like every IT guy has at least a couple of war stories that they just love to sort of promote and they love to sort of put out there. But like, oh, can you believe like the end user said that they were going to fix it themselves and that they were just going to go ahead and download it themselves. Can you believe how stupid they are? they all sort of have, you know, those sort of stories they love to perpetuate. How many times have we seen, like, on the internet, someone post, like, a conversation that a support person had with just some average Joe who was frustrated over a computer problem, and the solution ended up being something ridiculous, like, you know, well, did you turn it on? Well, was the power out in your house? Did you take it out of the box? Or, you know, something like that. And granted, I'm sure those are exceptional cases of people who, if not, aren't necessarily particularly bright, probably don't have at least the best problem-solving skills in the world. And I'm sure many people, and I would be somewhat in that camp, would love to sort of expound more on the lack of just thinking and problem-solving type skills that sometimes this very safe and civilized world of ours tends to perpetuate. But many times it's just normal people who just don't understand a particular discipline making normal mistakes that you would if you didn't understand it. Like, turning this around a little bit, like me, I have made, I don't want to say countless, but I've made at least a handful of mistakes with my car that anybody who knew anything about cars would go like, oh my gosh, you dummy, why would you put that fluid in that particular hole, so to speak? Or, you know, something about accounting or legal work or whatever. Like, you know, any sort of specialized field, they always have, you know, they always have their little war stories of some person who came into their shop who said this one particular thing and like, oh my gosh, I can't believe they just did that. Oh my goodness. Anybody who knows anything about this would have never have done this. I don't know. I feel like with IT guys, it's, I feel like there is a little less of that recognition that, okay, this just happens to be a field that I, you know, that I am a professional at, that I've either studied or had some credential in, or just have had a certain, you know, length and breadth of experience with. And this other person here not having that same benefit is just going to make mistakes that that are very understandable, not knowing what they're talking about. And I shouldn't, you know, sort of imagine that it's because I'm a particularly clever person that I didn't do that, or that they are a particularly dumb person, or really anything else other than, okay, this is just one more person who just needs help, and I should get off my, you know, my high digital horse and just help them with this and move on from there and not, you know, try to imagine myself as being particularly smart for it. There's a lot to unravel in that particular topic, just about, you know, different types of intelligence in general, and even for me, the difference between simply being a clever person versus being a sort of wise or a person with good sense. And there's, you know, almost entire podcasts that could be dedicated to that. But for the purpose of this particular topic in this particular podcast, I think it's sufficient to say that it's important to recognize that your IT guy is not necessarily, I mean, he may be, just because he might be a smart person in general, but by the virtue of the fact that he knows about this, or he knows how to fix your email or your accounting software when you didn't, doesn't mean he's a smarter person. It just means that he has seen this problem before, and this is his field of study, and this is what he does for a living, just like your plumber or your mechanic. I mean, I guess not a lot of brilliant and insightful kind of stuff there, but I do think it's important for people, not even so much regular consumers, but I think IT guys in general, to remember that you're not a particular bright guy, or you're not as smart as you think you are. So, you know, again, get off your high horse and just help some people out. Be patient with people, be humble with people, and move on. So, last podcast topic, I guess, just came about because of just, you obviously know what I'm talking about, of course. That's why I say, you know, of stuff that I hear people say in casual conversation sometimes, but usually when they're talking about some problem or some circumstance that they're in. There are certain things that people sometimes say that are usually, maybe just often, what implies more frequency, usually or often? I don't know. I'll assume usually does, and then often is second to that. So I'm going to use the term often and not usually, because usually is too far. But people who, so when somebody says this particular thing, it often really means sort of the opposite. So things like one of my favorite ones that my wife and I laugh about is when somebody says, like, I'm thinking more clearly than I ever have in my life, or like, never before have I, like, I'm finally thinking clearly, like, you know, like I never have in my entire life. Usually when people say something like that, especially when it's in the light of something that's kind of bad or disastrous that's going on in their lives, it usually kind of implies the opposite. It usually means they are in the middle of, or on the verge of, or in the aftermath of some very, very terrible and bad decision. And only later on do they go like, yeah, what in the crap was I thinking about that? But at that time, they're in this other mode of thought, and it makes them say things like, you know, I'm just thinking more clearly than I ever have before. Usually a red flag. That's that one. I've seen, heard a lot of people say things like, I feel like my problem is that I focus so much on others and I don't pay enough attention to myself. People, and again, that is sometimes a thing that happens and sometimes something that, people say, and okay, great. I feel like if that's a thing that you are often bringing up about yourself, it usually is indicative of probably the opposite problem. If in your mind you are always very conscious of the fact that you are, I'm just such a giving person, I just never think, then it probably means that you are a fairly selfish person, and that every small concession you make in the way of helping or being there for somebody else, it's just, oh, such a crushing burden on you that you're always just have this sort of false impression of your mind that, oh, I'm just such a giver. So that's another one. And then finally, the one I hear a lot about from various people is, my problem is I just don't think I have enough confidence. I just don't think I'm a confident enough person. And I feel like a lot of people in a lot of different places sort of say something like that. And let me gather my thoughts here, articulate what exactly I have to say about that. sort of first topic, the second one, I should say, if you think that, you know, that the reason for, you know, some failure or some inability to achieve X, Y, or Z, or something that went sideways in your life, if your first thought or first reaction is usually something like, well, it's because I just didn't have enough confidence, I just needed to believe in myself more, you probably have a tremendous amount. That, to me, that speaks to a tremendous, tremendous amount of self-confidence on your part. If that in your mind is usually your only problem, if it's not for a lack of initiative or good sense or sort of effort, or, you know, maybe a knowledge or readiness in this particular thing, if all that stuff was, if you're always just confident that you had everything else going for you, but really you just didn't believe in yourself enough, it probably means you believe it. It to me says rather plainly, you believe in yourself quite an awful lot. And I think a lot of people, again, don't get me wrong, there are certainly some people who do have a distinct, and I would say maybe clinical, for lack of a better term, sort of clinical kind of self-deprecating kind of thing about themselves, where, you know, they may be very capable of doing X, Y, and Z, but maybe things have gone on in their lives and things have happened where they are always just so, they can never just sort of, you know, with, you know, a clear and prosaic mind, just go like, oh yeah, I'm totally capable of doing that. And, you know, and just sort of do it. They're always just sort of plagued by just sort of these weird and morbid sort of self-doubts. And certainly that exists. But I think when people are like that in general, it doesn't always occur to them like, oh, I just didn't believe in myself enough. Because when you really do have that, it doesn't always necessarily occur to you that you are thinking that way. It's just, these are just thoughts that naturally occur to you. Like, I you know, I could no more go and, you know, help that stranger lift that couch than I could, you know, climb Mount Everest. It's a much more prosaic thought in their mind than something that they're just trying to really struggle with. Again, this is my very uneducated opinion on the matter, so take it for what it's worth. But I think the problem in general with a lot of this is that Well, a couple things. Number one, I feel like people are not taught to deal properly with a healthy amount of self-doubt. You know, you always see people who, you know, these great people, whether they're movie stars or athletes or captains of industry, and they always sort of, or people who are like motivational speakers and whatever, and they are always championing this idea that, like, you know, the people who are successful are the ones who just believed in themselves. They just believed they could do it. And even in the face of all this other opposition, they just believed and they just went and they just sort of did it. And that's why if you're not whatever successful, it's because you didn't believe in yourself enough, which when you sort of put it that way is kind of it does make it sound like a weird sort of superstition really. But I think that, it makes people ill-prepared for any kind of real self-doubt, because in this life, in this world, there will be things that you come across that will make you doubt yourself, doubt your ability to do this and doubt your ability to do that. And it doesn't. And I feel like a certain amount of that is healthy, because I feel like, as my good friend Chesterton put it, complete self-confidence is not simply a weakness. Complete self-confidence is also a sin. It is a sort of blinding and superstitious kind of belief when you're always just assuming or sort of artificially trying to project this belief in yourself in one area or another, belief in your own virtue or belief in your own strength in one particular area or another, where it may not realistically exist. I think it has a tendency of making you overestimate yourself, which I think in general prevents you from really growing. You know, when you have a healthy and realistic view of yourself and you see your limitations for what they are, it prompts you to work at them more and to try to be better at these particular areas rather than puff up all this sort of artificial self-esteem and go like, no, I can do it. Like, I am that person. I'm good enough. I'm whatever enough. Like, no, if you just sort of sit there and think realistically and healthily about yourself and see your weaknesses for what they are, you don't have to sort of, you just need to either, if this is something that I just really just can't do, this is something that maybe somebody else should do for me, or this is something else that I need a lot of work and a lot of patience with myself and patience with the thing itself, to be able to do, rather than just like sort of like, oh, just, you know, puff up all this sort of artificial pride and belief. And I think people are, you know, taught to be so self-affirming so often that anything that sort of feels like self-doubt, they just don't know how to deal with it. And so they're always just sort of this opinion that like, oh no, that self-doubting, that's bad. I need to sort of push that away. And that's my problem. I just don't have, I have too much self-doubt. I need to have more self-belief and believe in myself more. And I really don't think that's the case. I think more people would benefit from self-forgetfulness than sort of self-belief. And I think it's important to sort of think of it that way, because the opposite of being sort of artificially sort of self-inflated isn't being self-deprecating. It's being self. The correct response is being more self-forgetful. I think it was C.S. Lewis who sort of put it where he said, who put it very well when he said something to the effect of, the truly humble man is the man who could build the greatest cathedral in the world and know it to be the best, but would feel no different about it or no better or worse about it than if it had been built by somebody else. And it is that sort of almost detached, self-forgetful kind of opinion or opinion of yourself that I think people should exercise more, rather than just like, oh, just, you know, self-belief and just cultivating and sort of inflating artificially my self-confidence. Just having that sort of view of yourself is, I think, a much healthier and much better way of approaching it. I know that's a very sort of fractured and very scattered and probably a very incomplete sort of opinion on this matter, and I apologize for that, and maybe I should have sort of thought this through and cultivated this idea a little bit better, but I do think that despite the lack of clarity maybe I have on this subject, I think there is a real strong sort of a nugget, a kernel of truth in perhaps a rather rotten corn cob of thought. Well, I guess I've probably exercised all of the gum flapping that I really care to do for this particular podcast. Thank you guys so much for listening. Thank you for being there. Thank you for being a friend and a listener of the David Martinez Podcast, aka that thing that I do when my wife is gone for a couple hours. All right. Have a wonderful September, and hope to hear from you guys in cooler California climates. Thank you.